Welcome to the I3 podcast hosted by the Staff Development and Training Division of the South Carolina Department of Social Services. Our I3 podcast is a space where we as social service professionals can imagine, ideate, and discuss innovative ways to improve policy, practice, and the culture within our profession. If you have a passion for, or you feel called to serve others, then the I3 podcast is a place for you to learn, grow, and explore creative possibilities that could help improve the way in which you help others. With that said, I invite you to be present during our time together and allow your creative energy to flow as we discuss various topics in the field of social services. Hello, and welcome to the I3 podcast. My name is Dr. Gary James, and we have a very exciting guest that we'll be interviewing today. I welcome my friend, Dr. Suzanne Sutphand. Dr. Sutphand comes to us from the University of South Carolina, where she essentially focused on experimental social psychology, research, and scientific methods. And she also was an instructor for various courses over at USC. In her current role, Dr. Sutphand provides oversight for the Quality Assurance and Continuous Quality Improvement Division here at the South Carolina Department of Social Services. If you recall, during our last episode, we interviewed State Director Mike Leach and really dove into his passion, his drive, and his mindset on the importance of innovation in the work that we do. So I figured, as a natural transition and a perfect segue from that last episode, we needed to invite Dr. Sutphand for her to share with us her insight on quality assurance and continuous quality improvement as it pertains to work in social services. So Dr. Sutphand, welcome to the episode.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. So when it comes to your work, as a leader of the Quality Assurance and Continuous Quality Improvement Division, what role does imagination play in your daily efforts with your team?
Imagination plays a great role in our daily efforts. This was a program that was completely external to the agency as far as a dedicated quality assurance staff. And really, over the last year, a little bit more, we've worked really hard to bring the entire program internal to have a fully functioning state quality assurance system that runs independently, and we can trust that it is a neutral source of data and information. And so when I was asked to reflect on this, what I wrote was, imagine a quality assurance and CQS system directed by a researcher who's trained in micro and macro level system dynamics. And the reason that's important is because when you're trying to make change in an agency like this, it can't just happen at state office. It can't just happen with your frontline staff. It takes the combination of systemic level changes on the macro level, and then this micro level with working with individual caseworkers. And with my background and my experience as a sociologist, I have that. And then the other thing I wrote was, imagine that this person had worked with the agency as a contractor for years and spent that time developing real, genuine relationships with staff, delivering data presentations, strategizing on how to make improvements, and learning the realities of child welfare. So I'm a sociologist. I'm not a social worker. I have no background in child welfare, and I learned it sitting at the table with staff here over these years, asking a million questions, listening to every story they would tell me, learning about the realities of how casework is done. And so when I came to the agency and we were imagining this system, that is what I brought with me.
That's great. I know a little bit about building from the ground up. I did something similar with our training division here within the agency. So that is extremely challenging. There's so many obstacles that you need to work through to build a cohesive team. So when we talk about imagination and QA and CQI, what gives you that creative confidence? What gives you the space to just imagine, not necessarily a perfect system, but a better system and more enhanced system? What gives you that creative confidence?
My staff. One thing that Director Leach said in his podcast was that our staff are our greatest resources. And I believe that. And I think that my staff have more to bring beyond the skills that are required to do their job. And so one thing that we've done in this process is since we are also CQIs, we are CQIing ourselves. So that lets us take the good work, the good system that is there, and imagine a better system. I'm not involved in that process. My staff is involved in that process. This should be their process. They do the work. And so they know how to take the good parts of it and what we can improve upon to imagine and create really what I hope to be a model for other states to use in quality assurance.
So I love that idea, the fact that you have given your staff the opportunity and the space to really thoughtfully, critically think about the work that they do and how they can enhance that work. So I've been around the system for a couple of decades now. You know, in previous administrations, it was challenging to really find time to critically think, to find time to improve systems because we were so task-oriented and really focused on checking the box and doing the work. However, you know, we're an agency, we're approximately 86 years old. I think the agency was formed in 1937, from what directly shared last time. At this stage, we have to, not only within our divisions, but on the county level as well, provide those opportunities for staff to critically think and to imagine about a CQI process that can enhance and improve their work. Talk a little bit about what CQI means to you, what it means to this work, and the importance of it in terms of the outcomes that we're looking for the children, for the families, for the vulnerable adults that we serve here in South Carolina.
CQI provides an opportunity to be self-reflective. And when you're looking at a state and things that we roll out are massive in scale, and sometimes it can be dangerous to just fully statewide implement something. You need to do it small. You need to pilot it. You need to test it. Sometimes we all have great ideas, and they are great ideas, and sometimes they don't work exactly how we would think they would work. And so CQI and evaluation provides that opportunity to kind of fix things that we thought worked that don't while it's small scale. As we roll it out and start to implement changes larger scale and more statewide, we've worked out some of the kinks. And so CQI is just always that opportunity to say, here's our data. What is it showing us? What do we need to change? So when you incorporate that whole evaluative process in that, it really helps when we're trying to make improvements.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does. So when we talk about CQI, I think about adaptive leadership and adaptive design and really creating opportunities for people to improve the processes that they currently have in place. Now, as an agency such as the Department of Social Services, we understand that safety and risk and timeliness in terms of the work that we do really is paramount because we're dealing with lives, we're dealing with people's families, we're dealing with individuals. And we have to ensure that they're safe. We have to ensure that they're cared for properly. But within the confines of those particular restraints and those particular processes, we can't lose sight that we can always incorporate CQI in everything that we do. We can always incorporate continuous quality improvement on our day-to-day activities. And I think it's a must if we're going to improve the system. I don't want us to settle for mediocrity. I would love for us to strive for greatness as an agency. And I think that your division and your leadership really lends itself to that pursuit of greatness within the agency. Internally, what drives not Dr. Sutphin, but what drives Suzanne to do this work?
That's a great question. I've actually thought about that a lot because this work is not for the faint of heart.
Not at all.
It's hard work. The topic area is hard. It takes a lot out of you. And you have to think what we look at, what I see is like third removed from the actual work. And it still impacts me as a human being, as a wife, as a mother. You can't unknow things that we know. And I think that in this system, there are many people that play many different important roles. We have our frontline staff. We have our foster parents. We have our kinship caregivers. We have our families that are trying. And some of us are called to serve in different roles. And I feel like my skills lend to this role to help the agency make change in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for others of us that are able to serve in other roles as well to help children, then that's amazing. And I always have thought that if I do anything that makes the system better, if I have an impact, if quality assurance, if CQI, if anything that I've touched makes this system better for one child, for one family, I think it's all worth it. If you ask my kids, what does mommy do? They say mommy helps to keep kids safe. And I think that's a good way to summarize it.
That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal. It is challenging. It is daunting work. It's not for the faint of heart. You have to have a passion. And that's what I loved about, you know, our session, our episode with Director Leach. He has that passion. He has that drive. And I feel that same way because, you know, if you don't have that, then burnout certainly takes place, and you won't last, and you won't do the best that you can do for those that we serve on a daily basis. So self-care is critically important, but having that passion for sustainability is certainly there. You know, as we move from imagination into ideation, this is where the rubber kind of meets the road for me with I3. You have to really take the time to brainstorm about processes, about procedures, about policy, about legislation, and what can take place, what can actually formulate better processes, better legislation. How do you, as an individual and as a director of a team, how do you formulate ideas that help with the CQI and QA process?
Well, this is one part where also my research background comes into play in a lot of ways. And my desire to also network and kind of embed myself into also what are other states doing and network with those in other states who have my same role. And so as a researcher, I want to know, what are states doing? And are we kind of in line with what our system should look like? But more importantly for me, and what I think a lot of people don't do that I do, is look at what are other states not doing? That's your big thing. What are other states not doing that we can capitalize on, that we can use? That is a great idea. That is innovative. What are we doing, or how can we tap into that? And how can we take our system to the next level? The other thing I do with my ideas is I look to my mentors who have had my job in various other states, and I run my ideas by them. So I say, this is what I'm thinking. Have you seen this work? Have you experienced this? Tell me if you think I'm on the right track. And so I definitely look to those who have been where I am. And I love that consultation, and I really appreciate their support as well.
Yeah, that's great. There are some states that are doing phenomenal work. There are others that are lagging behind. I think that South Carolina is trending upward with the leadership that we have in place and really taking the lead in certain things such as CQI, such as training, child welfare, and the phenomenal changes that they're making in that area. Economic services, they're doing a phenomenal job, specifically related to the pandemic and those things that really were stymied because of the pandemic and what happened during that crisis. Adult advocacy, they're making changes. Child support, I mean, they're doing some phenomenal work in child support. Early childhood education, just across the board, we're doing some great work. But it takes a little more than work ethic. It takes the opportunity to sit back, make time to reflect, generate those ideas, and to put those ideas in place. How do you, as a researcher, as a sociologist, reel yourself in when you feel that you've kind of gone too far out there with your ideas? How do you ensure that your ideas are realistic? Because our charge, especially with this podcast, is to kind of provoke individuals to think critically about the work that they do. How do we ensure that they hone in and they focus on realistic ideas, as opposed to those far-reaching ideas that we know will not be accomplished because of the constraints that we have in state government?
One thing I've done is tried to align our work with other work that's happening in the agency, and that really only makes sense. So, but what that takes is agency communication and collaboration. So in child welfare, I want to make sure that what we're doing meets the needs of Emily Medea, our deputy director of child welfare, of Nikita Harrison, our operations manager. And I want to make sure that what we're giving meets their needs as well. So when I have an idea, I run it past them. Mm-hmm. And I say, this is what I'm thinking, and here's why I'm thinking it. Do you have any questions? Do you have any comments? Are you okay with this? Because it is a negotiation sometimes. They could say, oh, yes, I love where you're going, but why don't we add this in or take this out? And we should all be working together to make sure that all of our efforts meet the needs of all of our different program areas. I think the same thing with our work with training as well. We can say, we think we need to evaluate this. This is what we're thinking. How does that sound to you? Do you think that meets your needs? Does this evaluation meet your needs? And I think that it's really that communication and honestly, those relationships. A lot of working in a bureaucracy like this, your success depends on your ability to maintain excellent working relationships. And to do that, it takes listening. It takes being respectful. It takes if someone says that idea isn't where we need to go, it's not personal. Mm-hmm. It's an idea. It's mm-hmm. work. Let's figure out something that works better.
Right.
That's and you have to be open to that and not take it. You can't take it so to heart. We're all trying to make it better.
That's great. That is great. You're right. Because if I offer you an idea from a training perspective and you feel that it's not doable, I can't take that personal because we have to look out for the best interests of those that we serve. So that's why I think great minds, you know, coming together, thinking critically together, and looking at every angle, looking at things through the optics that you work in, the optics that I work in daily, and just trying to come up with the best solution possible. Again, for the end result, for our vulnerable adults, for our families and children, and for our individuals, because that's what it's all about. It's not an ego trip. It's about doing the best that we can, developing the best system that we can to serve others. So Director Leach mentioned something about not focusing on everything. Because, you know, you and I, we're visionaries. I know that. We can come up with some really crazy, far-reaching, stretching ideas. How do we, from a CQI perspective, really focus in on those very tangible, isolated things that we feel can make significant change and that are sustainable?
And I feel like in QA and CQI, we do two approaches to that. One is we look at the data. Mm-hmm. What is the data telling us? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times that's a really good indicator of where we need to focus our efforts. So if we see low performance and in our qualitative data, we see specific trends that are contributing to that low performance, we know that's something we need to focus on in our CQI work. And then also too, it is to what I was saying before about looking at the focus areas of our agency leaders. And if they say these are their three focus areas, then those will be our three focus areas. And if there are other things that we see that are critically important, that we will incorporate them in based on what we see in the data and then what the goals of the agency are.
Tremendous. So we have a phenomenal accountability data and research team that's led by Diana Tester. And we hope to have Diana on one of our episodes very soon. One of the things that I've heard recently is that the reports are great, but we just don't have the time to make change. And my pushback to that is we don't have time not to make the time to look at the data and to develop processes, practice, those types of things that can improve those metrics. How have you used Diana and the ADR team to help your work in QA and CQI?
Well, I've known Diana a really long time. We have a great relationship. And I think that she and I do really well at, I have my data and she has hers. And how does that work together? And also, I would have to add in with this Miranda Creech as well, because mm-hmm. the three of us are on your team. And the three of us meet, we try to meet, sometimes it always works out, but we have standing meetings monthly. And because a lot of times in this, roles can overlap. And no one needs to duplicate efforts. You know, Diana has, you know, the big data, and then we have our quality assurance data. And then Miranda really takes that along with data she collects and talks about how do we plan for this and how do we track some of those changes. So the three of us actually meet and discuss and talk about what are we seeing? What are we doing? How can we work together? How do we need to stay in our lane and work to make change that way? So I think that we do really well collectively combining the efforts of our three groups.
That's great. And you're right. It is truly all about relationships, understanding the value that each division brings to the table to help help better outcomes in the end. I'm glad you brought up Miranda's name. Miranda Creech is over our strategic planning and innovation division here within the Department of Social Services in South Carolina. That really is a great segue into the last part of this discussion as it pertains to transitioning from imagination to ideation into innovation. So innovation being implementing those ideas that we feel can make significant change, that can make an impact daily in the work that we do. What does innovation mean to you? What does innovation mean to your team? And what are some of the things that you've done so far that you feel are innovative? And I'll just throw you an alley-oop here, like the level 5 ROI evaluations.
Yes. So when I was thinking about innovation, the first word that came to me was new. So innovation is something new, something we haven't done before. And so when I was thinking and reflecting about what I was going to say here and you know, the three I's, and I've thought about this a lot as it relates to this work. I love innovation. I'm an experimentalist. I love coming up with a design and implementing that and researching that and testing that. But sometimes before you can get to new, you have to have a firm foothold in the basics. Mm-hmm. And so that I feel from a QA/CQI point is kind of what we've struggled with is I can design, I can imagine, I can create any new kind of test or system or process that we want. Sometimes we're not ready for that. And you can't be fancy until you've gotten a hold of simple. I remember laughing with Director Leach and some staff one time saying, you know, you can't put on your fancy earrings and your lip gloss until you got to have your jeans and your white tee first. The point of that in my, you know, crazy little analogy is we've got the tools and the resources and everything here to do the work. We have to make sure that we're first doing the work and then we can move on to more innovative things. One thing that we have done in quality assurance is because we're responsible for CQI and we don't have a large staff. With quality assurance and child welfare, what we've done is we have combined our CQI efforts with our quality assurance efforts. We have four regional managers and they're responsible for CQI in each of their regions. So what that means is that CQI is embedded in our quality assurance practices. Mm-hmm. So like to your point about we don't have time, I agree with that. I believe that. The challenge for quality assurance CQI and just agency CQI in general, which is run by Walter Caudill is my program manager for that. The challenge of that and what I've worked with them on is how do we make it so it doesn't feel extra, I call mm-hmm. it. It feels like work that they're already doing. It has to be manageable or people don't want to do it and they won't do it. I don't think you give people a pass for doing CQI. You hold them accountable for it. This is my job. I was hired here to do this, as was Walter, as was Janelle Mittenall, our state quality assurance manager. And so how do we do it in a way that works? And so that may mean it is not always the fanciest way, but it is the way that works. And sometimes that's what you have to do in the context of working in this bureaucracy.
That's great. That is fantastic. When I think of innovation, I think of things that are measurable because we have to determine whether or not the change that we're making from a CQI perspective is actually making a difference. Looking at the metrics, looking at the data to ensure that, you know, performance is improving as opposed to just doing something for the sake of doing something. With innovation, I need to you know bring this into the conversation. Innovation can be dangerous. You know, we're human beings and we get stuck in ruts doing the same thing over and over again with the understanding that it's not working. I mean, you can look at the data and see that we're not improving and in some areas we're regressing. It's dangerous work. It's dangerous in that we're held accountable by legislators. We're held accountable by the public at large. However, I think we're also held accountable by one another to improve the system because that's why we're here, to ensure that we're providing the best quality services possible for those that we serve. And innovation takes a level of risk. There comes a level of risk with innovation. There comes a level of vulnerability with innovation. From your perspective, I want to talk to you a little bit about courage and the courage that it takes to actually take your imagination, to take your ideas, and to implement those very innovative things that you come up with. Where does that courage come from for Dr. Suzanne Sutphin?
I think it comes from knowing that it's the right thing to do, knowing that it's what we need to make change. I mean, I've been around a long time. It is frustrating sometimes to see a lot of people working really hard. And like mm-hmm. you were saying, not seeing the data change, not seeing the numbers, you know, come up. And we know that a number is representative of an outcome, right? So if we're not seeing good numbers, we don't want to focus on the number. It's like what's underlying that number. And it's practice. Mm-hmm. And practice is more than just a case manager. It's our whole system. And so one thing Director Leach had said was, if we keep things that don't work, we don't have progress. But you need systems like quality assurance and CQI to help you determine whether or not things are working. Even something like the level 5 evaluation that you mentioned, I started that. I had not been here that long as officially working for the agency. And that was kind of a risk to take to say, hey, I read about this. I think we can do it. No, I don't see other states doing it. And reaching out to everybody and saying, this is going to be extra work for you. Like, this is not part of your job. But I think that this provides really solid quality information for all of us that can serve multiple purposes. And I think that's another way to be successful in a role like I have, is you have to make things, anything that you're doing needs to serve multiple duties. So if I'm adding on a review for my staff, I want to make sure that it's not just that review. We are doing other things in that context. And I really think that's what that level five is. It gives us training information. It gives us HR information to see why are people leaving. And it gives us that financial component to see what's the cost for the agency, and then how can we all work together to make improvements? And I don't think other states look at it in that way.
I haven't seen any other jurisdictions look at the data the way that we are with the level five return on investment evaluations. So when I first came back to the agency in 2018, I started looking at our contracts. I looked at the expenditures pertaining to training and the results. It was a little daunting. We expend a great deal of financial resources, into training. And, you know, to not have the level of professionalism within our workforce that we would like to have can be frustrating at times, because we understand, we've been on the front lines. We know how hard that work is. We know how challenging it is to deal with some of the things that our families and our individuals are dealing with. However, we also realize that we can do better. We can do better as an agency. We can do better as a workforce. So looking at the level five ROI really helps us understand where we could better target resources, do a better job in terms of sustainability and retention with our staff. On the child welfare side and economic services, turnover is rather high. How can we better prepare? You know, and these are the questions I'm asking myself. How can we better prepare our staff to be satisfied in the jobs that they do, to stay with the agency? And I think that level five return on investment evaluation tool that you brought to the table really lends itself to answering those questions. So that was one of the innovative things that I was just so impressed with when you and I first talked about training and CQI. So, you know, kudos to you for bringing that to the agency. And I believe that we're going to see a lot of great results because of that, in terms of targeting resources, strategizing, and making sure that we build a very robust workforce. So I see that you talk a little bit about self-reflection as it pertains to innovation. What does self-reflection look like for you, and how do you utilize that? I know you talked about that when we were speaking of ideation. How do you utilize that as it pertains to innovation?
So right now we have implemented a brand new regional model. We've reviewed two regions. We reviewed the upstate and the low country. And the goal, and that we're working with Miranda's team and policy on, is that there will be agency CQI policy overall, but then a specific policy for child welfare because of the way that we've structured about how to do these reviews and how to work to develop these regional action plans for improvement. And so the first time that we did one, we had I, and supported by my staff, had this, you know, grand idea. I'll say I only because I don't want them to have to take credit sometimes for my bad ideas. But I had this idea, supported by my staff. And then, you know, there were parts of it, and I knew the first time would be a challenge. And there were parts of it that worked, and there were parts that you say, okay, we need to shore that up. Okay, we need to make sure to change policy. So we were working double duty. As I'm drafting policy, I'm working with Miranda's team on policy. It's not ready to be published now. We need to see what changes do we need to make before we submit it for publication and submit it for review. And then every time we do one, since this is our second action planning process, we say, what did we learn from the first one? What worked and what didn't work? And how can we change it? And how can we better change it so it better works for the counties? Not better works for us, better works for them.
Yes.
Because they have to have ownership of it. This is their process. It's not my process. And then they need to be committed to doing it. And we want to set them up with a system that allows them to be successful. It's so frustrating to come in and to say, I think if you do this, we'll see great results. Doesn't work. And so that's all been just this iterative process of acknowledging with Aaron, who's my upstate manager, you're doing a great job. This is hard. The first time is the hardest. And then we have Tracy, she's my low country manager. Let's take what Aaron did and let's see how we can build it and change it and test that out in the low country. And then we'll move on to the next region. And so I think I'm the type of person that I like it done yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't like to wait. That's a hard personality to work in a bureaucracy. I acknowledge that. However, with this, I know if I want and I want all of us to get it right, we have to be patient and shore up what we can and try it again.
That's great. So I'm going to throw something at you right now that we haven't discussed yet, but I'm sure that you have some tremendous ideas about this in terms of innovation. How do we continue to incorporate those individuals with lived experience into the CQI process? Because you and I can imagine, we can ideate and we can innovate until the end of the world, but it still may not be the best for those that are receiving services. Some of the conversations that we've had and some of the things that have been implemented over the last few years is ensuring that those individuals that have lived experience, those individuals that have been served by the agency, they have a voice. Back in the day, they talked about voice of the customer and the impact and the significance of that. Within this innovative process, we truly need to have the voice of those individuals, those families that have been served by the agency. Some have had great results, others not so great. What are your thoughts in terms of integrating more lived experience into the CQI process, and what might that look like for you?
I love this question because it's very important, especially in child welfare and the other agency areas as appropriate as well, of course. But I think you see a big focus of it in child welfare. And I know that when we were working on the program improvement plan for round three, that was a really big deal of incorporating lived experience. And I completely support that. Challenges around that are we're paid to be here. Mm-hmm. I'm right now sitting in this room with you because I'm paid to be here. I'm not a teenager at school and I'm not a parent trying to work and having to take leave. I'm paid to be part of this process. And I think that as an agency, if we want to genuinely incorporate, then you have to think outside the box with that, because we have these meetings during the day. Kids should be in school. Yes. Parents should be working. That's exactly what we want them to be doing. And so we have to think about how do we incorporate their experiences, their wisdom, their knowledge, all that they bring to the table in the context of what we're doing. I don't know that I have a perfect answer for that. I mean, it requires going to meetings after hours, tapping in when you can, providing other spaces and opportunities for those with lived experience to plug in. But I think that's a great challenge. One thing that had come up in some other agencies was tapping into some of your staff that have lived experience. I know that you have to be careful about that because that would be a self-disclosure, of course. Yeah. But I think there's some other things that we can also do that if people feel comfortable, they can lend their voices, but we also have to acknowledge that we have to create the space. We're paid to be here. They're not.
Yeah. And the current administration provides flexibility. We have flex time. So that means that if I need to do something in the evenings to gain that lived experience perspective, then by all means, you know, flex your hours so that you can be there for them. Because that's honestly, that's what the important factors of our work, that's where it comes from. You know, how are we impacting human beings? Because you said it earlier, we're a human services agency. We don't work with widgets on an assembly line. These are people's lives that we're impacting. So we have to be as flexible as possible to ensure that they're integrated, that they're incorporated in the not only the decision making from a practice standpoint, but also from policy and inviting maybe some of them down to speak with the legislative body. So that they understand how the current legislation impacts individuals and families on the back end. To me, that's extremely important. It's something that we've talked about and we've done a little bit in the past. But in terms of innovation, I believe that those with lived experience, those that have been touched by the system in one way or another, we have to bring them to the table and really listen to them and incorporate some of the ideas, because they do not have the blinders that we have as state employees, as professionals in this work. They actually receive the services and they can tell us things where we are doing well and places where we're challenged. So I think that really has to be a part of the conversation. Other than the level 5 ROI, Suzanne Sutphen, what else comes to mind for you in terms of innovation with QA and CQI.
I think another thing is promoting this work. There's been historically an academic state agency divide. State agencies are more applied. The goal and the focus is not publication for an academic audience. And then the academic world is more basic research, not applied in how this actually impact an agency, and I'll write a journal article that they'll likely never read. So I think it's kind of for me, because I think there's value in both, and both are necessary. And I think I can provide that, and I do provide that. So like the level five evaluation, for example, I have been working on an article about that to write it up. How you promote it can be different, how you might promote it to others in a state agency versus how you promote it in the literature. And the reason the literature is important is because there are people that research this, that work in bigger think tanks to make change. And if we, as those a part of the agency, aren't publishing in venues that they will have access to, then they aren't aware of the good work that we're doing. And then we can't contribute to further change in that way. And so that's hard. I'm busy, as we all are. And it's hard to steal time, I call it, to write. But I like to write. And I think that it's important. I know it's not a requirement, but I think it's important for South Carolina to also have a presence in an academic way, as we can, as is appropriate, to publish some of the good stuff that we're doing. That shows that we're leaders. Small scale, less time intensive, put it on your website. You know, it doesn't always have to be published in academic articles. So one thing, when I started here, no website presence, no policy. Change that. Worked with IT, worked with communications to say, we need internal and external website presence. I want to be Googleable. We need to be able, those can find us. And that's one really good way. And then writing policies. You know, that was really important to me. Well, that's part of a functioning quality assurance and CQI system. There's no way around that. But that just didn't exist. And so we, my staff, my managers, we've worked really hard to have overall CQI policy, like I was saying, child welfare policy for the CQI process, and a process of how we do quality assurance. So if something happened and we all left tomorrow, that's future-proofed in that way that you could come behind us and say, okay, that's how they did it.
Yes. Yes. Great mindset. Love it. If things aren't working properly, we need to really do a deep dive into how do we better the system? How do we improve the system so that it's better when we leave, when we retire, than when we found it? I think CQI, quality assurance, you know, that is pivotal in everything that we're doing. And we really need to take advantage of yourself and your division, your team, to really look at everything that's happening, not only at the state level, but most importantly, at the county level, where our frontline staff, where our supervisors are actually interacting with those that we serve. You know, we'll continue to push CQI. We'll continue to push QA as an important part, a very critical part of the work that we do. We have to, as professionals, make the time to do this. As you stated earlier, we are very busy. Everyone has a lot on their plates. However, if we're going to improve our work, if we're going to improve our world, then we have to make the time to imagine. We have to make the time to ideate and innovate. And that can only be done in conjunction with yourself, with Miranda Creech, with Diana Tester, with myself, with training, to provide the best support possible for change. I think we're doing a good job, but we can do a much better job if we work together. My friend, what are some of the last thoughts that you want to share during this episode regarding what you do as it pertains to I3?
I think that even as we work to build new ideas and be innovative, imagine this system that really helps support and provide, it really creates that space for families to have good outcomes. The only way that we can do all of that is through accountability. And I think you and I have talked about reciprocal accountability. Yes. And that really resonated with me. And thinking about how as QA and CQI, we have such an important piece of that accountability process as well, because we are accountable to help give a pulse on what's happening in the agency and help to create the space and infrastructure to fix it, along with Miranda and Diana, like you just mentioned. But we're all accountable and we all have a piece, and we're here to support as we can in our way the work of frontline staff to identify areas that need to be changed, But I think if we really focus on this idea of accountability, we're accountable to each other and we're accountable to our children and our families.
Yes.
And so how can we keep that at the center as we work to imagine and design and develop and ideate and innovate all of these great things that we can do? We have to keep that accountability piece at the forefront.
That is fantastic. Yeah. And you mentioned reciprocal accountability, and that's not coming from a punitive perspective, but how can I help you in the task that I've given you? How can I be a part of the success of your work? What resources, what support might you need from me as a leader to help you as a leader be successful? And that's what reciprocal accountability looks like. Dr. Sepfan, I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your very busy day to be a part of I3. We will certainly have you back as we move forward with our work. Wishing you nothing but the best and success with your work. Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today on our I3 podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please follow and subscribe to the show. And until next time, remember to make time during the day to imagine the possibilities of how you can improve the work that you do. Write down your ideas so that they become goals to strive for. And lastly, begin to engage in critical thinking about how you can implement your ideas through groundbreaking, innovative ways as we work together to improve the world in which we live.